everybody, welcome to the Highlight Show. This is a show within our show where we sit down and talk to people doing really cool stuff. It could be someone starting a restaurant, it could be a youth group, it could be somebody who has just gone through something hard and has a really cool story to tell. We sit down with them, we pick their brains, and we glean what life lessons we can learn from their journey. Give it a listen.
Where, what's interesting is we've had this conversation. You know, the turning point really was, you know, all of what we've talked about was my individual career, my journey.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I remarried, and Lori was a big part of this. She was right there. Matter of fact, the day she was shopping for a wedding dress is the day I got laid off for the very first time.
Mm.
So she comes home and she's got her dress and she wants to describe it. And I'm letting her describe it. And she goes, "You look a little off." Well, I've got news for you.
Oh,
but she was just an absolute rock. And I have two boys, biological boys. They're now in their 30s. At this time, they're just about to start their careers. They're at 22 and 20, respectively, at this point in time. And now I've got two daughters, 14 and 6 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm realizing that this has to look different. There was a point in time where when I left our consulting business that we had built to join this large outsourcing company, I told my boys, and one of my boys goes, "We're going to be rich again. we're going to have more money again." And that always just dawned on me in that this is what I'm teaching my kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were several moments I would talk to my boys and say, "What is it that you think that I do?" And they would answer, "Well, you were on the road constantly. You always provided for us very well, but you were on the road.
Mm-hmm.
You tried to be at certain games. You tried to be at certain events. You really tried to control your schedule, but there were things that we missed. There were things that we lost in that. We had some things from it, but we lost others."
Yeah.
And I couldn't change that, but now it's different when you raise, as to me, it's different as a dad raising girls.
I can completely believe it.
I had taught my boys to try to be just like me.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because that's ego. Mm-hmm. It's easy. It's there to be the protectors, there to be the providers. And now I've got these two girls. The oldest is just absolutely against me. She is not happy about this. Not happy that we're married. We've moved her out of her neighborhood. She is not happy. And I'm realizing that it's my job to figure out how to try to raise her.
Mm.
And we've got a 6-year-old now too, and I've never raised girls before.
Yeah.
So I'm in this midst of challenging career, trying to learn how to raise daughters, and spending the first 6 months raising them as boys.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Rub dirt on it. Why do you feel that? Why do you keep bringing this up?
Yeah. Oh,
not man. Realizing any of that.
Yeah.
And just thinking that, okay, this is wasted time. Well, it's not. It's what they needed. It's where I needed to spend my time. It's where I needed to pour into them. And I suddenly, you know, again, this journey, I learned the mistakes I'd made with my boys. And I just became determined I needed to just show the girls something different. I needed to honor my wife in making that investment in changing myself to be a better dad of daughters.
Yeah.
And somehow that would potentially help raising my sons.
You know, that sounds right to me, because like I feel like having a boy, I would have been more of what I was, right? I would have amplified, I would have like driven it forward. But with a girl, because they're not me, like I approached it differently. Like I'm an outsider, like, and I had to do something, like you said, different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny how much kids change the story, you know, because like, I just, I've said it forever. Like, my faith journey changed because of my kids. Like, absolutely, 100%. Because I looked at it and was like, I do not want to screw this up. You know, like, that was just the biggest thing, you know? And I was like, and then you start looking at yourself and you're like, well, I want to break the cycle because I don't want to pass this down. I don't want to do these things. Like, you got to do some deep work. And it, the challenge comes, like you said, for me with girls, because I don't know girls, and I'm still learning it constantly because they're still different than me. Even though I've had them from day one, they still do stuff that I just don't understand, yeah. You know, and they'll cry and I'll be like, why are you crying? Like, we're just talking. I don't understand. they're like 5 and 8 and they're like, they don't have the words to tell me why, you know, it's just, so you do, you have to dig in. And I like what you said there, where it's my responsibility. I talk to a lot of people who are younger than me and they still believe that things are owed to them. And I remember when that switched for me professionally. I had a manager who said, like, nobody owes you anything. Like, if you want it, it's your responsibility. You know, it was with communication, because I was in a communications, and they were like, well, you sent the email. If you want a response, you have to get the response. You don't just sit and wait for somebody to reply to you and then blame them for not replying. If you need a response, then you go get the response. And so then you follow up and you become persistent and all of these things. And that's, I think, a key point there too, where you say, like, it's not going to happen for me. I have to take the responsibility. If I want this girl to not deal with the things that I have to deal with, or she needs something more, you know, it's up to me to change me to provide that, mm-hmm. You know, and that's not a normal mindset, right? Because, like, there's the entitlement that comes with the other person needs to do that, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's their fault. It's their thing. But to say it's my responsibility to do this for them is different.
Well, and Lori, you know, Lori had entrusted me with these kids, you know, us falling in love, wanting to be married. I now knew that I was going to do the lion's share of the raising. Our oldest daughter, her biological dad, was in California. They saw each other a couple of times a year. Our youngest daughter, 10 miles away. It was a split arrangement. I knew that I was at this point going to be raising them. Mm-hmm. And I loved them, but there was another L word that started to pop into my head, legacy. And it was all ego-driven when it was boys. Mm-hmm. The legacy is they're going to follow in my footsteps. They're going to do this. They're going to do that. They're going to see what I did. They're going to see how hard I worked, and they're going to mm-hmm. do those mm-hmm. things. And that's how they saw it. That's how they saw what my role was. And they started to have to reconcile whether or not they wanted that.
Yeah.
And by that time, they had already started in the working world. Mm-hmm. So they were starting to carve out their own path. And it was, well, what am I doing to really share a legacy with them? They mm-hmm. really don't know what I do. They really don't know what I believe. Because I was on the road a lot at that point. You know, I spent 8 years with that crazy travel schedule. Mm-hmm. And we would make up for it by a lot of activities when I was home, but I really wasn't teaching them enough.
Yeah. And we kind of send boys out. Mm-hmm. We just say, here you are. Then we send them out into the wild. Yep. And if they come back, cool. Every once in a while, we'll feed them spaghetti. But for the most part, go.
Right.
And girls, it's different. We kind of keep them around and nurture them a little bit differently. Boys, we just send them to the wild. And
exactly.
Say, don't die.
Yep. And that's kind of the relationship is that now at this point, my oldest son, he's married. He's gifted us Oliver, our mm-hmm. grandson. Matt, he is, you know, he's out on his own, been that way for a while. They're out there mm-hmm. protecting, providing, doing the family thing, building relationships, building their careers. I don't worry about them because I know they'll figure out that path. Mm-hmm. That probably sounds old school, but I really worry about Lindsay and Mackenzie. I really, you know, but I also then realized something else, how I acted was going to have a direct influence on who they were going to be with long term.
Truth. Oh man, that was heavy.
And
that's a heavy one.
I needed to exemplify what type of guy they would be looking for.
Yes.
And that was a big weight on my shoulders.
a huge
weight on my shoulders. Oh, because I'm flawed. I'm divorced. I'm the corporate guy. I can be brash. I can be blunt. I had to be. I worked with lawyers. Mm-hmm. I could cut to the chase. I can have a mean streak because I had to oftentimes in business. And now I've got these two very impressionable young ladies that my wife is trusting me to
model.
Be a model for, right? You know, as Barclay said, I didn't want to be a role model.
Yeah.
And I certainly didn't want to be a role model to girls. I just didn't understand how they thought.
Yeah. 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 But yeah, that we don't have that choice.
No.
And that's a huge, like, I think there's more credit that needs to be given to dads who accept that responsibility. You know, like, there's a lot of people who want, like, our culture is wacky, right? But the girls, you know, like, they're going to do all these things. Like, yes, but dads who have the responsibility to say, hey, I'm going to demonstrate for you a good model. And if you go screw up, at least you're going to have a counterbalance, a counterexample. Again, that's that idea of it's my responsibility for them, which is not a normal type of responsibility. I think that only comes with being a parent. Maybe it doesn't, but that's how I learned it, you know? And that responsibility, again, like, kind of taking a lot of the work responsibility and then seeing it apply in real life with my kids and all these things, all then cycle back into your kind of inner self, right? And you realize, oh, hey, I'm learning all of these things so that my relationship with God can develop, can change. Yes, there's still the practical things that need to happen, but they're not separate. It's not like, go do this thing. Oh, you learned this lesson. It's happening simultaneously. You're modeling for your daughters, but you're also learning what it means to be faithful. Huh. And that is a development in your relationship. Again, they're not separate. So, you know, these things in your life are impacting your faith in the reverse, you know? So you kind of mentioned that it had started to, like, your faith had kind of been changing and it helped with the relationships and the work decisions. How did the work decisions and things to the changes impact your faith? Like, going backwards, like, when you had the kids, the girls, now you have to do these things. Like, how did the practical piece translate back into your faith?
Well, I think in a lot of ways, as I mentioned, the last corporate role, there were a lot of those hallway conversations. We ended up moving from a very large church to the church that I now work at.
Mm-hmm.
And in a lot of ways, we were trying to get connected. We felt that it was great to go and hear a sermon. It was great to be part of some of the programming, some of the activities, some of those spiritual experiences. But we really didn't feel the connection piece. And I credit Lori with this. I traveled forever. I am a very high-functioning introvert. So sometimes too much energy,
yes,
too much relational will wear me out.
Yes.
And I am one of those guys that can just sit and be in a room with people and not speak for hours.
I like to be alone with people.
Yes, exactly. I remember, you know, I can remember all of those flights home. I was okay. I would find something to do. I would find an activity. Mm-hmm. I would work. So Lori really sought connection. Mm. So we came to this church, and it was very, very quickly that my wife invited herself to a life group, just happened to be our lead pastors. She has us going to our Copper Hills 101, which is our membership orientation. And now for the first time, we are really involved in a church as a married couple. So that was huge because, again, I was mm-hmm. raised that it was a behavior set or character or trying to be a good person or doing these activities mm-hmm. to now, well, wait a minute, it's really loving thy neighbor.
It's community.
It's serving one another. Mm-hmm. It's community. And that really changed me a lot in that, okay, now I have to model for these young girls. I'm hoping I'm modeling for my adult sons. Mm-hmm. But now I'm modeling for others. Mm-hmm. And that was when Brad tapped me on the shoulder. When I learned I was modeling for others is when he tapped me on the shoulder. And I was really quiet in life group. I would say a few things. I would really ask more questions than mm-hmm. I would weigh in on an opinion. And Brad, for some reason, about a year in, tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey, I really want you to volunteer here. I want you to do, seems like you've got some strategic background. Can you do finance, HR, mm-hmm. the facility, the precursor to the role I serve in?
Yeah. Now. Yeah.
And so I got time with him. We prayed together. We prayed about projects. We prayed about various things that were happening in the church family. But we prayed for my family. We prayed for my soul. He would start various meetings asking how my soul was. He still does to this day. Mm. And those were things I hadn't really thought about. Those were things that were in my living room, in my office. I would open the Bible when I felt like I needed something. That type of interaction with him, that type of interaction with our life group, wait a minute, I need to be thankful. Mm-hmm. I'm blessed. These relationships are the type of relationship that he wants to have with me. Mm-hmm. But I'm a show me guy, right? So I'm waiting to be shown by Jesus. What does that look like for him and I? Mm-hmm. I see it now. Mm-hmm. I see the power of community. I see the love of community. But I still don't get this part of it.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, I've never had that interaction. I've never heard his voice. I've never felt his presence. So what does it feel like to do that? And that's when the big moment hit for me. As I was, my daughter at the time was 16. She'd just come out from a night with friends. It's midnight. And I'm sitting in the back patio of our old house. And I've got nothing in front of me. I'm just sitting there. And she's like, what's happening? And I said, I'm thinking about my legacy. So she sits down. She's now a social worker. She's big into psychology. She's big into the identity, how people feel, how they relate to themselves. All of that. And so she was just fascinated. So we spent 2 hours talking about what my legacy was going to be. What do I do? What do I believe in? What are the things that make me tick outside of that silly football team in the Northwest?
Yeah.
And, just that was really the precursor for why I took this role, is that was the catalyst for that role. That was really my first experience with Jesus. Is I threw my hat in the ring for this role. I was with 4 other people. We all knew each other. And at one point, I was shortlisted. And then they wanted to talk to me, but they were going to offer me the role. And I have all of these objections in my head. Can't afford me. I can't do the role. I'm too brash for this role.
Yeah.
I didn't go to seminary. I'm not a pastor. Mm-hmm. I had all of these wonderful objections that my clients used to have for me.
Yep.
And I'm woken up at 3:00 in the morning. And it is a vivid replay of that conversation with Lindsay. And I wake up in a cold sweat and I realize I've got to take the role here. I've got to take the role here because it is a way to share my faith with my kids. Mm-hmm. It is a way to share a calling with my kids. And it's a way to really exemplify my faith.
Yeah.
I'm being told to come here. And that was the informative moment for me, is that it all started with that legacy piece.
And it all, oh, wow. I love that. Because it just kind of, it culminates and it builds into, because we're big on community. And so individualistic faith, you know, is what it is. But it's missing something. Like, it's not complete. Once you get, you know, like, you have all the Bible, there's all the Bible verses bumping in my brain, but whatever. Just that as soon as you get to express your faith, right, you get to, like, plant the seed, and then it grows. It's so weird the way that doing that creates more in you. You know, like, it changes something when you aren't just a Christian in your closet reading your Bible, but then you go out and you live this. It's different. It's so different. And legacy, I also think legacy is something that we don't talk enough about, because we talk about it in the wrong way. You know, we talk about it like sports stars and their legacy and the Hall of Fame. But, like, I just think about, what are my girls going to remember? What are they going to think about? What are they going to tell their kids? What stories are they going to say about me? And similarly, like, one of the things that came up was, I want to tell my girls that they don't have to be afraid, right? They can go do whatever they want to do. If they want to go do that thing and they're willing to work hard for it, do it, even if you're afraid. But then I had to sit there and go, well, I'm sitting here afraid in my closet, not willing to step out on my own. Well, guess what? Got to go step out on your own. And so, like, I love how kind of same thing. You kind of stepped out into this role, and it's impacting everybody around you. So now you have, you know, the epitome of it. You have your job and your faith literally coming together into one spot. And the impact that it's having is not going to be just in your job or just in your personal faith. It's going to be everywhere around you, which, I mean, isn't that the dream for us? Like, that's what I'm shooting for, you know, like, to be able to do that, to where you're living it in complete, like, everything is aligned and it's all in the same place and it's ordered, and the impact is just immense, I think.
Yeah. And I was just called by something in Matthew about being a humble servant. And I realized I was chasing a lifestyle in which I was going to, quote unquote, be the man. I was going to run this thing. And then I had taken inventory in that last 10 years and said, I don't really want to run anything. My gifts are second chair leadership. I love to serve. I don't need the limelight. And in fact, I love the fact that nobody really, if something doesn't happen, that's because we did a great job.
Because we did it right.
I don't need that level of affirmation because I'm very informed by Colossians 3:23. What I do is for him. If I get recognition from others, sure, it feels great.
Yeah.
If I get recognition from people, but I'm working for him. That is ultimately why I made this decision, because it came down to really wanting my four kids to see that I was willing to give up a lifestyle, so that I would be able to show them a calling. I really wanted them to humbly serve other people. I really wanted them to share their love of people. I really wanted them to see that they could build a lifestyle around that, and that it was important.
Yeah.
And we've started to see that. We've started to see the shift. Yeah. My youngest son's an EMT. He was chasing a corporate role. He was thinking about what he wanted to do. He was thinking about money. Now he's an EMT, and he wants to get into a fire department, is working towards that. My oldest son, he's got a family now. He's got to be chasing a lifestyle. We talk about it occasionally.
Yeah.
But he's thinking about these things. My daughter, who was part of really the catalyst for this, she went to NAU to become a social worker. She's now a case manager with a portfolio of clients that she just simply cares and loves on.
Yeah,
she goes and delivers food boxes to people under bridges. She takes people to critical doctors and health appointments. She takes them to the gym. She talks to them about things. She's not a Christian. she's trying to figure out. She has spirit, a spirituality about her, but she's trying to figure out where that all comes from. But we actively pray for her, and we actively pray with her, and we feel very strongly that that will all come together. For our youngest one, you know, she's talking about either being a psychologist or a lawyer, but she wants to do it for those that are under-resourced. So it's having an impact. They see something different.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you can preach it all day long, but it doesn't mean anything until you step out into it. And then they go, oh, that's real. Okay. Because the caught not taught is very real, you know, and being a model is very real too. And that's why I think I love the story, just because it is like, you have to put your money where your mouth is. You have to go do it, or they don't believe it.
Right.
Our kids know us better than we do. Like, they watch every single detail about us. My kids are still young enough. I'm still kind of a superhero, so they'll be disillusioned eventually. Like, I know it's coming, but they know us. They've seen us their entire lives, you know, and so they know when we're blowing smoke. They absolutely know it. They might not be able to articulate it, but they experience it and they know it. And so you have to go do it. Otherwise, it's not going to make it into them. You know, you really have to step out into it. And I think that also takes big faith to do that, because it's hard and it's scary.
It is really hard. And yet I'm here for you when you make that transition from Superman to Uberman, where there is
not ready.
All you're providing is rides and fast food. But you know, the reality of it is, it is so gratifying to feel like you're having those small little daily influences that they see. I know they've seen changes in me, my temperament, my comfort level, just a general thankfulness, my presence with them. I'm by no means perfect. I get it every week. We really want you to be a little bit more present. We really want you to spend a little bit more time. But, you know, that's that balance of that introvert piece. Working in ministry is hard. Yeah. It's hard for a functional introvert.
Yes, it is.
It's the business intersection of our church. It has a number of different ministries that are just growing, that are very unique in their complexity. It's not that they're overly complex, but when you intersect them with a church, there's a complexity.
Yeah.
But to see, for my family to see that, for my friends to see what this church is able to do, and to understand that we're a part of it, it's been impactful. It's been life changing. It's been transformative. I mean, it's been reconciling. When we had a consulting firm, my best friend of 25 years and I had a falling out. Yeah. We talked every day. We talked two or three times every day. We got together on the weekends to watch football games. We had a falling out. And when we both left that consulting firm, and just recently, unfortunately, there was a death in their family. And this church was able to host a celebration of life in very short order and serve them in a very unique way, in one of the most horrific events that those folks will ever face. And we're rekindling that friendship through it. And I think that they see the impact of serving and calling. And for a lay person like me, I'm not biblically trained. I'm not seminary. We talked a little bit about what my role is. I am slowly on a path to be a pastor. My lead pastor will say that I am the executive pastor here. I do not believe that I've earned that title.
Right.
I don't believe that I am there yet. I don't think I'm successfully pastoring our team fully yet. But
that's what makes you good at your job. And that, so like, as you say that, and like, this is just me interjecting, I apologize for interrupting, but like, I almost want to encourage to not lose that. You know what I mean? Because those of us who never, like, if we can be this guy Ed Mylett I listen to a lot uses the phrase blissfully unsatisfied. You know, like if you can not be miserable but still maintain that sense that I'm not doing as well as I could, you know, that's kind of the motivator that helps us keep doing better, right? To never take the foot off the pedal, to never do all of these things, you know, to not get complacent. And so like hearing you say that is encouraging to me, because I know from experience that the people who have that disposition are the people who tend to serve the best, in my opinion. So like as you're doing that, like this is just like a random encouragement from me that that's a good disposition. I think it's difficult, like you said, it's hard and it can be exhausting, but
I appreciate that, because I am playing a big role in caring for his bride. Mm-hmm. So that's never lost on me. That is never lost on me. Yeah. And that what we do has a direct influence in how our church family sees Jesus, mm-hmm. how we react to certain things, how we hold certain events, what spiritual experiences we offer, even the volume of music from time to time. Yeah. All of those things have an impact as to whether or not we warm a person for hearing what our pastoral team teaches. And that's not lost on me, that those little details are the things. And if I ever start taking credit for it, or if I ever get complacent in that we're doing it good enough, then I'm taking my eyes off of why I'm here and who I'm serving.
Right.
Because there's a whole lot of what and how we do things, but we can't ever lose fact of the who and the why. Right. And that's really something that Brad has instilled in me, and hopefully I'm helping instill in our team.
Yeah, because when you're serving an eternal God, you're never going to reach the end. So you're never going to be good enough. Like, there's no stopping point. Like, you can go forward forever, mm-hmm. you know? So I like that. So wrapping up, Jim, man, I'm very grateful for the conversation. It's been an impact on me. Like, I'm going to be chewing on this one for a little while. But if you were to look at kind of your whole experience and kind of wrap it up into one life lesson for somebody to take away, like, what would you tell them? Like, hey, from my life, this is the life lesson I would want you to take and apply.
It's a fantastic question. For me, it's all about calling. It's all about taking time to intentionally, prayerfully discern in a very discerning mindset, figuring out what your calling is. It's understanding your spiritual gifts. Mm-hmm. It's understanding your talent, your aptitude, heart, and wrapping that up into a calling. And loving people, serving people, and the lifestyle will come.
Yeah.
You'll be provided for. He will provide for you. He has certainly done it for our family. He's certainly done it for Lori and I. But it's all about loving and serving people. You will do it your unique way. That's the other piece, is that I always felt that potentially I might be hypocritical because I can be brash, I can be blunt. It's all about my identity is in him. Mm-hmm. He created me uniquely. And I can still serve him in ways that just look different.
Yeah.
And as long as I'm pointed to that and I'm doing that biblically, those are the life lessons I'm really learning right now. And they're starting to really take hold in me.
Yeah, I agree. Because I think, you know, again, your story, looking at my story, it can be difficult seeing other people and believing that our calling is their calling. And we put ourselves down roads and we end up with golden hooks in us because we think that their calling is what I'm called to do. But, and it's not necessarily wrong, but it's usually not true. Like, your calling, everyone's unique and your calling will be unique, but it's hard to find that. But it's worth the work, and your life experience, I think, has played a huge role informing that, right? So, because, like, I'll honestly say, like, again, I'm coming up on 40 and I don't think I've had a completely clear understanding of calling. You know, like, it's not something that just, you know, like, I've always been jealous of the people who are like, oh, I wanted to be a doctor since I was 5 years old, and then I went to, you know, I became a doctor and now I'm a doctor and you're and I'm happy. And you're like, well, that's you're all kinds of names that I would like to say, but won't because it's so frustrating, you know. But life and life experiences, as we're moving forward, help form us into, and then eventually we just got to come to that point to do the deep work and really just ask, seek, knock. What is it that you're calling me to, and how can I use what you've given me to bless what you're doing? You know,
absolutely, and not to let anybody dissuade you from that. Not to let anybody make you question that. That is, your calling is uniquely individual, and it's an individual tie to Him.
Yeah.
And there were so many people when I announced that I was leaving corporate to come here. Mm-hmm. My corporate folks. Yep. I had no idea you were faith driven. You sure you can do that? Mm. Family.
Yeah.
Family.
Sometimes the closest ones are.
The closest ones. Yeah. My wife was all in, mm-hmm. but there were others that thought, man, I don't know if you're going to fit. Mm-hmm. And that motivated me. That motivated me to really think through and understand what I was embarking on. But more importantly, particularly when I got here, it took me about 3 months to figure out. It's not about how and what I do. It's about who.
Yeah.
It's about who I serve. And he will let me know. Hmm. I just need to listen.
I love it. I love it. So if do you want to let people know how, like, if they got questions, comments, concerns, like how to reach out to you, go to Copper Hills?
Yeah, go to copperhills.org. You can go to our staff page. I think it's under About Us. My email address is there. It's a very simple email address, jim@copperhills.org.
Yeah.
Would be happy to sit down with anybody that might have any questions, might have a similar journey. I'd love to talk about people or talk with people that have similar journeys. Mm-hmm. And, you know, help potentially someone think through what their calling is.
Yeah, fantastic. I highly recommend it. I've had some conversations with you, and I appreciate them, and the church is next to Well, so like everybody who knows us here knows that I enjoy Well, so come get a cup of coffee, have a conversation. It's worth it. Jim, thank you so much, man. Really appreciate you. Grateful for it.
Thank you, Brandon.
All right. With that, we'll say adieu.